Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
But I do think that there are reasons to believe that we are getting our way through some of these supply chain challenges. Obviously, the Omicron variant poses new risks, but if you look at the goods movement flow through the logistics supply chain, there are a lot of reasons to believe that as we come out of this holiday surge, we have been able to address some of those principal bottlenecks.
Brian Deese is director of the White House Economic Council. He's talking about supply chain disruptions and was explaining to CNBC.
So certainly we're going to stay focused on it and not downplay or dismiss the risks that are on the horizon. But at the same time, a lot of reason to believe that we can work through these issues over the next couple of quarters and get ourselves back to more normal operating rhythm.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Now, we're in a strong position to address the challenges we face, and we have challenges, including the cost and prices that people have to pay.
President Joe Biden on Monday at a White House roundtable promoting competition and reducing prices in the meat industry.
We've already laid out a three-part plan to address costs that families are facing. Number one, fix the supply chains. We're going to have another discussion on that in a couple of weeks with the Secretary of Agriculture. Protecting consumers, number two. Three, lowering kitchen table costs, including with my Build Back Better plan. But today, we're here to talk about strengthening competition, which will bring down cost.
He says agriculture is a prime example.
Back in July, I signed an executive order to promote competition across the economy. In too many industries, a handful of giant companies dominate the market. And too often, they use their power to squeeze out smaller competitors and stifle new entrepreneurs, making our economy less dynamic, giving themselves free rein to raise prices, reduce options for consumers, or exploit workers. The meat industry is a textbook example on the price side. Four big corporations control more than half of the markets in beef, pork, and poultry. These middlemen that they buy from, farmers and ranchers, and sell the processed product to grocery stores. That's the way it works. Without meaningful competition, farmers and ranchers don't get to choose who they sell to. Or put another way, our farmers and ranchers have to pay whatever these four big companies say they have to pay, by and large. But that's only half of it. These companies can use their position as middlemen to overcharge grocery stores and ultimately families.
And offers a real-world example.
I was sitting in my kitchen yesterday, and there's a sunroom off the kitchen, and my wife was there with her sister and a good friend named Mary Ann, and she was saying, do you realize it's over $5 for a pound of hamburger meat? $5? Well, this is partly, you know, the pound of beef today costs $5 compared to less than $4 before the pandemic. And here's some historical context. 50 years ago, ranchers got over 60 cents for every dollar a family spent on beef. Today, they get about 39 cents. 50 years ago, hog farmers got 40 to 50 cents for each dollar they spent. Today, it's about 19 cents. And the big companies are making massive profits. While their profits go up, the prices you see at the grocery stores go up commensurate. The prices farmers receive for the products they are bringing to market go down. This reflects the market being distorted by lack of competition. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Capitalism without competition isn't capitalism. It's exploitation. That's what we're seeing in meat and poultry and those industries now. Small, independent farmers and ranchers are being driven out of business, sometimes businesses that have been around for generations. It strikes at their dignity, their respect, and the family legacy so many of them carried for generations after generation.
USDA, along with the Department of Justice, announcing four steps. One, prioritizing matters impacting competition in ag. Also, developing a centralized, accessible process for complaints under the Packers and Stockyards Act. Also, promoting effective information sharing and case cooperation between the two. And vigorously enforcing current laws. It's Agriculture Today.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Take the guesswork out of preparing your cotton for harvest with NanoPro. Utilizing NanoPro's revolutionary nanoliquid technology, your harvest aids go to work faster and more efficiently, increasing leaf drop, reducing regrowth, and helping your cotton be ready when you are. Offering a 3-to-1 return on investment, you can't go wrong with NanoPro. Learn more or find your nearest dealer by calling Tracy Carrillo at 575-639-5110 or visit aquayield.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Well, I think we're going to kind of see how what happened in 2021 may work its way into 2022. So obviously the elephants in the room are the COVID situation. So we're going to see if this is a wave that we're going to get through quickly and then get to the backside of pretty quick in terms of the Omicron, and see how that impacts our markets and see how that impacts our economy and see how that impacts the demand side of the equation in terms of consumers.
That's Bob Maurer with Manduca Trading in Chicago saying we need to look at 2021 to have a better idea of what's coming in 2022.
And in particular, and how that translates into the commodity markets is kind of the same stuff that we've been going through last year or two, in as much as what could be happening in terms of restaurant demand, catering demand for, say, the beef market and the pork market, see how that's going to work its way through. Overall, just general psychology in terms of consumers out there also. So that is the one of the main things.
We often look at commodity markets, but Maurer says we need to look at capital markets as well.
The other is, you know, how that all translates into, you know, the capital markets. And I know we don't talk about a whole lot the larger and broader stock indices as a whole, nor do we generally dive into interest rates and, you know, their trickle-down effect and their impact in our commodity markets, prices moving up and down. But I think that's going to be key, too. We've come off a year in the stock indices that was phenomenal. If all you did was sit on your portfolio on Jan 1 of 2021 and not do a darn thing, and you were broadly invested across the indices, say the S&P in particular, the Dow, maybe even the NASDAQ, although there was a bit of a roller coaster for some of the individual names there, so you had to deal with some volatility. You know, net, I think the market was up for the S&Ps up around 27%. So pretty much you could just sit on your hand if you can handle the volatility, sit on your hands and not pull the trigger about exiting and worrying about timing, and you would have made 27%. And I tell you what, it doesn't take too many years in a row at 27% returns to double your money. So it's really going to be interesting to see what happens this year. If things aren't as accommodative in terms of, you know, what the Fed has been doing, for example, central bank has been doing, for example, what politicians have been doing, for example, in terms of stoking the economy, building in some confidence that we're going to get out of this whole pandemic situation. And it's a lot bigger than me, and I'm not going to even pretend to give you a guess of what's going to happen, but, you know, definitely, do I expect another 27% up year? I don't. I could be dead wrong, but I don't. I expect more of a balance, and in particular, primarily because at this point, it seems like the Fed's going to do its one of its jobs, and that is tamper down inflation. So if that comes into fruition and we see higher interest rates, and higher interest rates, you should see lower, you know, bond futures. You should see lower shorter term futures like the euro dollars. And we've kind of already seen that. Those 90-day euro dollars, heavily traded, extremely liquid market. Between March and June of next year, they're pricing in a 25-quarter-point differential. So rates in June of this year should be, if the market is correct, about 25-quarter-point higher than where March is, you know, and then you can just kind of see how that might trickle down into the 2 years, the 5 years, and the 10 years. And that is some of the big macro things that I'm looking at.
It's Agriculture Today.
Making memories on your own piece of land is priceless, like skipping rocks across the watering hole, wetting the trot line, or teaching your youngster how to drive the ranch truck. Capital Farm Credit is the financial partner to help you realize those memories. We offer competitive rates and flexible terms on farmland, ranch land, and recreational property. Let us finance your dreams. CapitalFarmCredit.com.
Ring in the new year with savings at South Plains Implement. Looking for a new ride? Get great deals and financing options across a wide selection of John Deere lawn equipment during the Winter Green Sales event. Have time to tackle repairs on harvest equipment? In-stock peanut and cotton harvest equipment parts 15% off. Ready to plow into planting season? South Plains Implement offering 15% off complete sets of tillage parts. Some restrictions apply. Offers end January 31st at South Plains Implement, where farm meets family.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's been a wildly successful program, obviously, and it's enjoyed broad industry support.
Tanner Beamer is Director of Government Affairs and Market Regulatory Policy with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
That being said, Congress is a very difficult working environment right now with such tight majorities in both the House and the Senate. It really does require some broad bipartisan support to move any sort of legislation. And so for that reason, I think that's why you've seen LMR be temporarily extended since its original reauthorization lapsed in 2020. We've never seen authority lapse in this current LMR cycle, but that's because we keep getting temporary extensions through the appropriations cycle. So LMR is currently reauthorized as part of the continuing resolution that's funding the government right now. That will continue to be the case until February 18th of 2022. However, at the same time, Chairman David Scott of the House Agriculture Committee has introduced legislation that would extend LMR's authority to September 30th of 2022, which, of course, is the end of the federal fiscal year. That legislation passed on a broad bipartisan basis out of the House of Representatives earlier this month, and we are awaiting Senate action on that.
Livestock mandatory reporting, just one issue. What's the status of the other legislation?
You saw the Cattle Contract Library Act pass on a similarly broad bipartisan basis in the House of Representatives. Now, that is a new piece of legislation, at least in terms of cattle prices and cattle contracts. There's been a swine contract library for some time now, but we have not had a similar resource available to cattle producers. I think one of the reasons that you saw that particular piece of legislation move so quickly through the legislative process is because it enjoys such broad support from a wide variety of industry groups. And I don't think it's any secret to anybody on this call that those groups that support the contract library don't necessarily see eye to eye with each other 100% of the time. And because there is that consensus there, I think you saw such fast movement through the House. It was marked up unanimously on a voice vote by the House Ag Committee within 48 hours of being introduced. And there were only 14 members that voted against it on the House floor when it came up for a full vote of the House. So that is kind of the dynamic on the House side. Now, with respect to Fisher-Grassley, I do need to reiterate, even though that NCBA, we have tripped that second trigger in our price discovery framework, and that will compel us to pursue some sort of legislative or regulatory action in terms of price discovery, it does not automatically change our position on any of the existing legislation. We still have firm policy that opposes government mandates of cash market activity. So we are still opposed to the Senator Fisher, Senator Grassley hybrid bill, and we will remain opposed to that until such a time as our members direct us to do otherwise through our policymaking process. We are aware that that bill is they're looking at livestock mandatory reporting as the vehicle to move not only the contract library bill, but also Senator Fisher and Senator Grassley's piece of legislation. And what our message to Capitol Hill has been and will continue to be is, first and foremost, LMR is too critical of a program to be allowed to lapse. That is the number one market transparency tool that is currently available to cattle producers. And letting that authority lapse would be vastly irresponsible. So first and foremost, we have to preserve the integrity of LMR. And then secondly, we would strongly advocate that those legislative ideas or cattle markets proposals that do not enjoy broad support and are controversial within the industry, they be considered separately from LMR, because we can't afford to jeopardize LMR's chances of getting reauthorized in either a short-term or a long-term basis.
It's Agriculture Today.
For years, Texas cotton growers have had a trusted partner when it comes to choosing their varieties. Next Gen brand cottonseed from AmeriCut. Next Gen varieties bred specifically for West Texas growers have performed year after year, even in harsh conditions. And for this year's season, there are several new Bolgard 3 Extend Flex varieties available. Contact your local Next Gen representative or dealer today to learn more about varieties suited for your needs. Next Gen, your West Texas partner for performance cottonseed.
Tired of wading through the muck of farm policy? Join the Texas Wheat Producers Association and let them handle the dirty work for you. Each year, the Texas Wheat Producers Association builds relationships with legislators, conducts congressional visits, and builds a unified voice for Texas wheat producers. Join today and help ensure your voice is heard in Austin and Washington, D.C. A message from the Texas Wheat Producers Association.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Grain constituted 12% of all dry bulk cargo. Now, 12% is significant, but of course is nowhere near as large as coal and iron ore and that minor bulk volume of cargo.
So why is Chinese demand so important when considering freight rates? Jay O'Neill with O'Neill Commodity Consulting.
So again, it's the other commodities that tend to be the drivers in markets. It tend to be what makes the market go up or down. Grain is more or less a follower of these markets. And when we look at coal and iron ore, you will notice that two-thirds of all coal and iron ore business depends on Chinese demand. Two-thirds of global seaborne trade in iron ore and coal goes to the Chinese market. So what happens in China is very, very significant to global ocean freight rates. As China demand increases or decreases, it impacts ocean freight markets and ocean freight rates.
So let's move from freight rates now to just the general feeling among producers. Dr. Jim Mentert is director for Purdue University Center for Commercial Ag.
The ag economy barometer rose 9 points this month to a reading of 125, up from 116 last month. And the rise in the barometer was driven mostly by an improvement in the index of current conditions. The index of current conditions rose from a reading of 128 last month all the way to 146 this month, as producers felt better about what was taking place on their farms currently. The Farm Financial Performance Index also rose to a reading of 113. That's up 7 points compared to last month when it was a reading of 106. There was a 6-point rise in the percentage of producers expecting better financial performance on their farm, and the percentage expecting no change actually fell by 5 points this month. The Farm Capital Investment Index rose 10 points to a reading of 49 compared to 39 last month, and the percentage of producers expecting to reduce their machinery purchases in the upcoming year actually declined 6 points compared to a month ago. However, 45% of producers in this month's survey still say that purchase plans for farm machinery are being impacted by low machinery inventory levels. Producers continue to express some reservations about what's going to take place in 2022. For the second month in a row, we asked producers what their biggest concerns are for the 2022 crop year. 47% of the producers in this month's survey said higher input costs are their biggest concern looking ahead. In a follow-up question, we again asked producers by how much they expect to see farm input prices rise in 2022 compared to the prior year. 39% of the producers in this month's survey said they expect to see farm input prices rise by 30% or more in 2022. That's an unprecedented increase in farm input prices. This month, we asked a couple of additional follow-up questions with respect to crop input purchases. 39% of the producers in this month's survey said they had some difficulty purchasing crop inputs for the 2022 crop year. We followed up and asked them which crop inputs have they had the most difficulty purchasing, and the answers were quite widespread, ranging from fertilizer, farm machinery parts, insecticides, to even herbicides. The long-term farmland value expectation index declined a little bit this month to a reading of 152. That's the second month in a row that farmland value expectation index has declined. However, the index remains above 150, and it's been above 150 consistently going back to the tail end of 2020. Despite some of the concerns producers have expressed about the 2022 crop year, corn and soybean producers continue to expect higher farmland cash rental rates. In this month's survey, 51% of the producers said they expect to see higher farmland rental rates in 2022 versus 2021, and that's up significantly compared to October, when just 43% were expecting higher farmland cash rental rates in 2022.
It's Agriculture Today.
On the phone with Joe Guzman, Director of Sales for Equinom Smarter Sesame. Joe, 2022's here. You have lots of opportunities in sesame.
That's right, Stephen. We have grain handlers with 2022 agreements ready to be signed. Smarter Sesame makes a great rotational crop for producers who are planning for the new crop and season. With inputs on the rise, Smarter Sesame is a great choice for low input acres.
Joe, if somebody wants to find out more, how can they do that?
They can call 1-833-SESAME or visit equinom.com.
Every drop counts. Introducing the Patriot 50 Series Sprayer from Case IH that puts every drop of product exactly where you want it. Enhanced LED lights, a cab designed for all-day comfort, and more precise spraying technology. Because just like you, we know every drop counts. Visit your local Wiley implement for details on the new Patriot 50 Series Sprayer.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
As I travel around the country, I've heard sad stories of farmers and farm families who've had to leave this business because of a lack of competition. Your executive order on competition challenged us at USDA to take immediate action and to develop a set of tools to expand processing capacity, increase competition, improve farm income, and create good-paying jobs in rural America.
Agriculture's Secretary Tom Vilsack speaking at a White House event focused on competition in agriculture. He was joined by President Joe Biden and Attorney General Merrick Garland.
And we went to work. And because of your American Rescue Plan, we have the resources to be able to do meaningful work, committing over $1 billion, broken down as follows. $100 million is going to be utilized to reduce the cost of inspections for existing small and very small processing facilities. This is going to help us maintain the capacity we have. $32 million in grants were awarded to 167 existing facilities to modernize their operations, to allow them to expand their opportunities beyond the state border to engage in interstate commerce. This is going to expand market opportunity and income opportunities for these processors. $100 million in available loan guarantees to address the middle-level supply chain challenges that this industry faces, cold storage, warehousing, and also allowing these facilities to expand their operations as well. We believe this $100 million will leverage nearly $1 billion of investment. And the announcement today we make is an $800 million commitment of grants and loans to address capacity, workforce, and innovation challenges the industry faces. We're going to make available, Mr. President, $375 million in grants for expanded facilities and new construction of new facilities. Now, we want to get to work right away because farmers have been waiting a long time for this help. So $150 million of this resource is going to be made available under a request for proposal that we'll file this spring. These resources will be made available to projects that are just about ready to get going, but just need a little bit of help to accelerate the implementation plan. So this $150 million, we believe, will help to sponsor at least 15 new projects that will complement, expand along the 50 facilities that that you mentioned earlier that the major four companies currently have. So it's a significant step forward. $225 million of grants will then be made available this summer for products and for projects that are just getting started, that are on the infant stage. Our phase one goal, as I indicated, is 15 projects. Additional $275 million, Mr. President, is going to be provided to our lending partners to create more affordable loans and financing available for facilities that are being built. Even if we build more facilities, we also need a trained workforce, Mr. President. And so $100 million of this resource is going to be used to support and to create a pipeline of well-trained and experienced workers so that we can expand this workforce in rural America. These will be good-paying jobs that will support families and also support farm families, Mr. President. And then $15 million of it is going to be utilized for technical assistance and research. We're going to need a lot of innovation in this industry. We're going to need new business models. We're going to need new ways of innovation and technology to create greater efficiencies. And small and mid-sized facilities need to have the opportunity to have this innovation as opposed to the big four.
Again, USDA identifying an urgent need to expand and diversify meat and poultry processing capacity, increase producer income, provide producers with an opportunity to have ownership in processing facilities, as well as creating stable, well-paying jobs in rural regions. It's Agriculture Today.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Now is the time to sell. Demand for used equipment is high, and Purple Wave Auction can help you reach the largest community of online buyers. Whether you have a single item or an entire fleet, Purple Wave Auction offers a hassle-free way to sell your equipment. Visit purplewave.com. Straight. Simple. Sold.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Now, in looking at how exports have gone thus far, we're in pretty good shape, but just not quite the record levels we were seeing at this time last year.
Chad Hart is an Iowa State University Extension economist looking at U.S. soybean exports.
You think back to last year at this time, we're marketing the 2020 crop at that time, and what we were sitting at was basically record export sales as we went into the holiday season, where we had already booked over 2 billion bushels of soybeans for the international marketplace. As you can see here, our five-year average, that black line on the chart, says we should normally be around 1.4 billion bushels, and that's exactly where we are right now. So we're running at our five-year average, not quite as strong as last year, much better, though, than what we saw 2 years ago. And so when we look at who's shifting or adjusting here, what we've seen compared to last year is sort of a downward trend across the board, pretty much. But it has been the Chinese market where we've seen the greatest losses as we're looking forward here right now. As you can see here, Mexico's off a little bit. We have seen some gains in other markets, especially as we look at the European Union and Japan, but they've been incredibly small relative to the volumes that we talk about when we're looking at our first two major export markets up there, China and Mexico. And in fact, in this case, China's the dominant feature where you're talking about in any given year, they'll take between 30 to 60% of the soybeans that we export here out of the U.S. So we have seen that pull back, but that, again, that puts us back on our long-term average in terms of soybean exports.
Now, Hart also takes a look at U.S. corn exports.
We've been able to maintain much more of that record momentum that we saw with last year's international markets. As you can see here, the red line for 2021 is just hovering just below the record sales that we saw last year for the 2020 crop. And that's holding well above the five-year average as well. So we do to continue to see, especially on the feed demand side from the global marketplace, some very strong demand for U.S. corn. And China continues to be a part of that. Actually, our sales to them are up this year compared to last year at this time. But we've also seen growth in Mexico and Canada, Colombia, Guatemala. We've seen many of our, let's call them major export markets, hold fairly strong. Where we've seen a reduction is in some of our smaller markets. And then in those sales where we didn't know where they were going last year, but a lot of those unknown sales did end up in China. And so this is one of the things I'm watching as we move through the course of the next month or two, is that typically the pattern when you look at soybeans used to be the unknown destination category. You would pretty much count that as China. For the corn market, that unknown destination category was sort of split between many markets, and China was a relatively small component of it. But last year, as China moved very strongly into the corn market, we saw them utilize that unknown destination category like they do in soybeans. And my thought process is that we're seeing that again this year. And so while the China bar is up, I think a lot of that loss in the unknown destination category is going to turn out to be the Chinese market again. So we are likely going to see that number for China slow down, fall down here as we move through the rest of the year, especially as we see that increased competition coming from the Black Sea, along with watching for the South American crop and how quickly that crop may enter in to the export markets early in 2022.
It's Agriculture Today.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com and texascrp.com, to view many properties we have currently listed in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Give us a call at 800-933-9698 to discuss these properties in detail. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
This is Agriculture Today.
The mention of extreme weather for this last week of 2021 should also include continuing dryness in parts of the central and southern plains. As USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey notes,
the central and southern Great Plains remain critically dry, and especially since the big mid-December dust storm.
Very little precipitation in some areas since mid-October. Rippey says this raises concerns about winter wheat.
Left winter wheat in pretty rough shape heading into the middle of the cold season. It's not too late to revive that crop, but certainly winter wheat stands are very uneven.
As well as pasture and rangeland conditions, primarily brown and unhealthy. In addition,
that has led to a number of flash fires. Even on December 27th, we saw a grass fire near Denver burning about 150 acres. It is happening this year due to the dryness and the cured vegetation, the low humidity levels, and the gusty winds that continue across the central and southern Great Plains.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.